Welcome back to the program. Good morning. If you tune in at 10, where have you been? You missed an interesting first hour. But anyway, let's get to some of your comments coming in so far this morning. Every day you read about the weather, Met Aaron, ahead one day it's great and the next your hopes are dashed, especially along the west. So things not looking great in the first week of July. No heat wave anyway, but we are going to get significant increase in temperatures. Have you any good news about the weather this summer? Is not coming at all. Raining here, so disappointing this time of the year. As I say, Saturday, Sunday are going to be warmer at least. Look, we're not. It's not beach weather. Hi, Greg. Barrister Una McGurk has made an application to the High Court asking for court orders to pause the Dáil from voting on the EU Migration Pact until a referendum takes place. Mr. Justice David Nolan says this way the Dáil... vote was deferred. I don't believe that's why it was deferred, but we'll see how she gets on with her actions. We were talking about the minimum wage, and you know that sliding scale under 17, 17, 18, 19, before you then hit into the full minimum wage. A caller says the minimum wage is not the problem. It's the employers who need to be honest with the people they're hiring. Pay what they are worth. By doing this, they'll find the people who are worth paying more than the minimum wage. But younger does not mean less experience. So if they start on base wage and work your way up, it's worth it. That comes in from Johnny. Good morning, Greg. 18-year-olds should be getting the same wage. Lots of these 18-year-olds were probably working weekends, lifting glasses, etc., and were given $350 a week. We heard no complaints then. Just wondering, has the COVID tax ever been started to be paid back yet? Well, are you on about the payments? Because I got a very interesting note from Revenue as it relates to pandemic payments. I'm glanced over it. I don't want to look too deep into it, if I'm completely honest with you. A caller says, how much of this violence is mutual? How much of it is false reporting? Well, you see, the problem is there's two things there in that first sentence, and I'm not sure it really helps or progresses the situation. Firstly, it's that it kind of comes across, I'm not saying what you're saying, it kind of comes across as saying maybe the woman was asking for it. And secondly, it's not believing someone who's actually making that accusation. Do people make false accusations? I'm sure they do. Does that account for 40,000 calls to Women's Aid? No, it doesn't. But listen, it's your point of view, and I'll read on here. These calls are surely not all true, or are they? The more money pumped into Women's Aid, the more they will seek victims to prove their worth, sadly. There should be zero tolerance of all abuse, including parental alienation, coercive control, and other forms of abuse, no matter the gender. I don't think in any case... I think victims should believe personally, and I don't think in any case, in some way, if a woman is being beaten, stabbed, raped in her own home, and makes the call to seek help, to start talking about whether it's mutual or are they lying, I don't really think that helps us as a society move forward. Women's Aid, you can have your question marks over them, that's fine, it's up to you. Dr. Marie Hainsworth is someone I know and interview regularly, and if she says to me, that there's more violence, that the rate is increasing in Donegal, then I'm going to listen to what Dr. Marie Hainsworth said. I would like to ask, does the Green Party think that when Eamon Ryan steps down, that this is going to help with the public? Also the same with Fine Gael. We are the people. We the people know these parties have destroyed Ireland along with Fianna Fáil. Do you really, if that's what you believe? Because the local elections wouldn't suggest so. Micheál Martin and Simon Harris are cock-a-hoop. Everyone says they were going to be wiped out at the local elections. Yes, they lost seats, but they're two of the biggest parties. Their actual percentage of the vote didn't change much at all. They did lose a few seats. Sinn Féin was supposed to come in and sweep the board. They made gains, but certainly didn't make the gains that people were expecting. And Eamon Ryan going and someone else coming in, unfortunately, the public will go, well, not unfortunately. I mean, the reality is the public will go, oh, okay, you know, Pippa's a nice woman. She seems to get us. We'll vote Green. That's the way it works. People go in cycles, you know. It didn't take much for the government to do in terms of some of the language around, say, for instance, migration and what have you, for people to go, all right, might as well stick with these guys. That's what happened in the local elections, I think. But anyway, the caller believes the parties will go down in history for what they've done to this country. People have very short memories, you know, and there's very clear examples of that, even locally, on some of the biggest issues we've ever faced, that memories can be quite short. Morning, noon and night this week, 7 a.m. this morning. Rally cars are blocking the R254 in Glenveagh National Park to race and rally cars. The rally organisers say ring the guards, as if the guards had nothing better to do. There are rare birds nesting here now, and these rally drivers, many of whom may well be participating in the Donegal rally, I don't know, they obviously care nothing for wildlife or the fact that the road goes through the national park. Locals and tourists have to sit waiting for the cars to move as they block the road to traffic. Tourists going to the bridle path in Glenveagh don't know what's happening when they find the road blocked. It's no wonder there are so many collisions in Donegal when this behaviour is tolerated. Any more on that, let me know. Hi, Sinn Féin and others need to get their act together, says a listener. Less talk, more action. They really have done nothing, only shouting in the door. Look at yourselves with the loss of seats. Thank you. Well, in fairness to Sinn Féin, they're an opposition party and primarily their role is to raise issues in the door with a view to garnering the public support to eventually be in government and follow through in those decisions or not. So really, in opposition, your hands can be tied somewhat as well. Hi, Greg. The Complaints Department office in LUH is essentially the size of a broom cupboard. It doesn't fit three people seated in it. Go and see for yourself. It's a joke. And last, just before the bingo numbers, because it is jackpot day, if there's a reshuffle for Cabinet, I think that we need a new Agriculture Minister. It's a pity that Sinn Féin are not in government, as Piers Doherty is a great speaker and advocate. Charlie McConnellogue and the other ministers took too long to do anything about the horse scandal and the cruelty. It's too late now, they say. Right, now, we are about to play bingo, and I just want to give you a reminder that this is Vision Ireland bingo. Vision Ireland do fantastic work across Donegal and the country in supporting people who are visually impaired, or those, unfortunately, that happens very regularly, that are told that their eyesight is deteriorating, and they support them in many, many different ways. Majority of their fundraising is through fundraising, all right? The majority of the funds is through fundraising. And Vision Ireland Bingo goes a long way to supporting the work that they do here in County Donegal. The bingo here, it's not a club. You don't have to be in it from the start. You can go into your local shop or retailer. You'll see the books there, hopefully, or ask about them, and you can start playing straight away. It's a euro a day to play, and there's hundreds of euro every day won, and then there is the big jackpot, and that money rolls over, and the prizes are really, really good. But the point being is that it supports Vision Ireland. That's what the critical element of all of this waffle is from me. And you can start playing anytime you like. You don't have to, as I say, be a member or a club, or no one's going to take your table when you turn up for bingo, if you know what I mean, with the radio bingo. So here are the numbers. Now, as part of this week's Your Voice, Your Community, in association with Commissioner Mann, funded by the TV licence fee, we speak to Balumi Dube, TED Project and DIP community worker with the Donegal Intercultural Platform, about connecting for life. Balumi's with us. Great to see you again. How are you keeping?
I'm good, Greg, and you?
Very good. You Thank talked you. Of a summer. I think that was yesterday.
Yes.
If you have any influence, please. We want the weather. Right. Okay. So Connecting for Life is what, Balumi?
Well, Connecting Life has been supporting us greatly at Donegal Intercultural Platform in terms of bringing awareness to people in terms of mental health work. But they've also been working with Donegal Youth Services as well. But as part of an event that we have today to mark both Refugee Week, which runs from the 17th to the 23rd of June, and Men's Health Week, which runs from the 10th to the 16th of June, Donegal Intercultural Platform, supported by Connecting for Life, are delighted to launch four video films promoting positive mental health messages for men that are available in four languages. That's English, Arabic, French and Ukrainian. Yes.
Obviously, look, we're all very conscious of mental health and the rate of suicide, and it's across all communities, across the community. There are supports, there's messaging. Mm-hmm. Sometimes with language issues, or maybe if you have lived here for a few years, maybe you're still consuming media from your home country or what have you. Is it a particular issue, do you think, in getting the supports and advice in there to Ireland's new community members?
Yes, I think it's Connecting Life has played a crucial role in terms of that. We've been aware that language is a barrier in terms of accessing mental health services. And like you rightly said, everyone of us has been touched by suicide in a certain fashion. We've lost, either we've lost a colleague, a friend, somebody very close to us. And this is an attempt to actually to reach out to particularly the BME community who experience those kind of barriers in terms of language, and perhaps who are not aware of the services that actually are there, that are available for them. Yes.
Okay, let's have a quick listen to one of the videos that we've mentioned to give you an idea of what we're talking about.
Doniga Intercultural Platform is reaching out to men from migrant communities, saying, "You are not alone. Your health matters.
You deserve happiness, good emotional and physical health in your life. And there are people in the community always willing to help you.
It's okay to feel low, but don't stay silent. Reach out to friends. Let people know how you feel.
Speaking out doesn't mean you are weak. You need to unlearn things in order for you to learn new things.
And always remember that no one is the custodian of strength, be it mental or physical. We all need someone to lean on.
Remember, eat well, get good exercise. A good physical health means a good mental health.
If you are feeling unwell, talk to your friends, talk to your GP, talk to us. We are here for you.
For more information, contact the Doniga Intercultural Platform.
This short video is supported by Connecting for Life. HSC.
And I think, you know, when there are support numbers and what have you, but I think really often the conversation can be about what makes people different. But in reality, it when you boil down to it, we are all the same.
Oh, yes.
Because every single one of those gentlemen from wherever they're from are all facing the same challenges. Obviously, in certain cases, it's even worse, right? Mm. But fundamentally, right, it's about speaking to each other, reaching out, having that conversation, and we're all the same in that regard.
That's true. I think, and also particularly with men, we experience sort of the same kind of barriers. We often keep things, inside. We don't talk about it. So, but we're trying to encourage this culture of sharing, of ensuring that whatever you're going through, because all of us go through that. You know, like you rightly said, it doesn't matter how different our cultural backgrounds are. When it comes to mental health, we sort of encounter the same kind of barriers. Mm. So, and we need to develop a culture of, you know, speaking out, a culture of finding services so that we can be able to, deal with mental health issues much better.
And I think, I'm not sure if it's new terminology, but it kind of landed with me a little bit different in there, where it wasn't actually referencing almost specifically mental health. It was, if you feel unwell, reach out. And I think that's far... I think we distinguish too much between physical and mental health. And this is just a broader point, Baloo made, you know what I mean? And in the video, and if you're watching it, if you get a chance to see it, when they sort of, if you're feeling unwell, obviously, you know, at that point it's visualized by someone in a state of distress mentally, right?
Oh, yes.
So I like that phraseology, to be honest with you, rather than making the constant firm distinction between mental and physical health.
Oh, yes, because it's very connected as well, it's very connected. Your mental health affects your physical health. Your physical health also affects your mental health. And precisely the people that we sort of have to contact to sort that out is usually the healthcare system. So it's precisely knowing where to go, who to talk to, and knowing that there's no shame in actually talking about that, and knowing that there's strength and courage in actually sharing your stories, with other people with regards to mental health, yes.
In talking about priority groups, we all face trials and tribulations and struggles in life, but I presume a significant proportion of those that are fleeing here for refuge,
yes,
be they men or women, but men for the purpose of this question, are coming from very traumatic situations. So they're carrying that trauma baggage with them here.
Oh, yes. So I suppose because we have sort of structured this and targeted the BME community, and in a certain way, again, a certain percentage of those people will be people seeking asylum or who are refugees themselves. We have experienced some form of trauma where they come from, whether it's political, whether it's violence, and so on. But it's also the trauma of where they live currently, because they find that they are in tight spaces. They are not allowed certain freedoms or certain liberties. And we think that it's a mental health issue that they need to be able to reach out, not only just to express themselves about the trauma that they've experienced where they come from, but also about the trauma that they're also experiencing right now.
Living in terms of having our movements restricted, we all got an insight into that during COVID, didn't we? So
yes,
you know what I mean? And it is relatable because we know the impact that had on so many people.
Oh, definitely. So
what other work is being done then? So, I mean, because obviously we want people to reach out for support, but the supports also have to be there.
Yes.
Because we don't know. The one thing concerns me is that sometimes people maybe have one telephone call in them or one reach out in them, you know, and that call has to be answered.
Oh, yes.
I think. And those supports need to be there. And I just hope that the more people we get to come forward and talk about their mental health or to seek help, but that the services are actually there for them.
Oh, yes. So we are in partnership with HUG, with GROW, with the Samaritans, with the HSE Mental Health and that. So we are actually making sure that, you know, people are aware of the different services that are available to them in terms of mental health. But also with regards to that, our event marks, you know, the production of or showcasing this video. But it's been a process that we have gone through. So that means we have constant conversations with men that are living in direct provision or that come from the BME community or any other men that actually experience mental health. So while we are actually showcasing this video, it actually shows that we have gone through a process of actually engaging with the men and actually identifying, you know, common issues that they sort of encounter. But also, it's a continuous process that we're having, and this relationship with Connecting for Life is one that is long-term. So we will continuously engage with men, have conversations with them, conversations for change, and conversations that can lead them towards the right services. So we while it's an event, a one-day event, but it actually reflects a longer process that we're having, because we don't think it's just enough to say these are the numbers and that, but we believe that we should encourage this culture of, you know, being together, of sharing stories.
Yeah. That's all men, all women. There's a crossover here, obviously, because it is Men's Mental Health Week. It's all men, regardless of the background. But today is also Refugee Awareness Day. And I just wanted to focus on maybe the additional layer of difficulty there might be on refugees or people that have only been here for a number of years in accessing the services as well. So it's kind of, we're getting two birds with one stone. There's an event on in the Century Cinema. What's that about?
So today we're at the Century Cinema between 2 and 4. We're going to be showcasing the four videos, but it's not just the four videos from the men that we've been working with, but we're also going to be showcasing music or songs that have been written by young people that have been working with Donegal Youth Services and Connecting for Life. So we're going to be showcasing the videos that showcase the sort of reflect the process that we've been going through, engaging people that living in direct provision, explaining the difficulties and the barriers that they actually encounter. It's between 2 and 4 at the cinema. There are going to be many service providers as well that work with mental health. So we hope that this can be a sort of a reflection of the kind of barriers people encounter, but also a reflection of hope, you know, for people to say, look, there's actually help out there. It's not, you're not isolated. We know of the conditions in direct provision, but it's also an opportunity for people to actually be able to see life through the window, the angle of a person who's a refugee themselves. Sometimes who are victims of harassment or being targeted or, you know, being ridiculed in one way or another. You know, that all adds to the mental health issues that they actually encounter.
Yeah, for sure. Yes. Okay. And can you just roll up to that between 2 and 4 today?
Between 2 and 4 at the cinema. You can roll up. You don't need an invitation. If you want, you can just come in. Yes.
Anything else you want to mention, Bulume, just before we wrap things up?
Yeah, I think mental health issues are, you know, universal. So while obviously our target is the BME community, but we realize that mental health is an issue that affects everybody. And I think the more people jump into the ship and try to help each other out, I think the better.
Lose far too many people to suicide. And you feel these are preventable losses, but there's very few families or individuals listening to us today that have not experienced this and the devastation of it. So anything we can do to try and reduce it, we must. Bulume Dube, TED Project, and DIP community worker. Thanks for your time.
Thank you for your time. Thank
That's
you for
with
inviting
the Donegal Interracial
so
platform, of course. Back with more very shortly. A texter says, house insurance prices. 2 years ago, we paid €350 for house and contents. Last year, it rose by €100 to €470, no change in the details. This year, it's risen to €790, with no change to details or no claims made. Well, I would hope you would have increased the rebuild cost over those 3 years. But that's, I'm not giving out or questioning you, but please, if you're getting house insurance, if your house is worth €140,000, if you were to sell it today, don't insure it for €140,000, because what you are doing is you are insuring it to rebuild that house, and it would be much higher than that. But anyway, this year, their house insurance has gone up to €719. Shopped around and premiums are similar across all providers. How can they raise prices so much? Is there any known reason for such price hikes? Now, as I say, rebuild costs have gone up, but have they gone up that much over the last 2 years? What's your experience of home insurance? $350 to $790 is a massive, massive jump. As I say, obviously there are going to be some changes because the rebuild cost is going to increase, but surely not by that much. You know, we're paying for it, and what's it for, really? You ask defective block homeowners what their house insurance was for. Right, okay. There is a stretch of road, of the Lifford Road, that is notorious. It's becoming notorious. It's from the Manor roundabout to Lifford. It's high speed, high volumes of traffic, and unfortunately we're seeing high level of road traffic collisions or road incidences. Councillor Donald Coyle's with me now. Hi, Donald, how are you getting on?
Good morning, Greg, and good morning to your listeners, and thanks for having me on.
The problem with this road is that, well, firstly, I don't like it too much. I think it's really quite dangerous, but it would be replaced as part of the 10T. So are they going to spend anything between now and then to improve the safety of it, I wonder, Donal?
Well, I think immediate action has to be taken on the stretch of road from the sign at Mornings there at Mondewey to the crossroads at Geldena, because of the number of serious incidents that has occurred on this road over the last while. This is something that I have highlighted, on numerous occasions by submitting motions to the council, asking the council to contact TII, because this is a TII road. It's the main artery from Letterkenny to Dublin, and the volume of traffic that's using it is huge, and there have been a number of serious incidents that has happened on this stretch of road over the last number of weeks. Even a lorry went off the road about 2 weeks ago, and there earlier this week a lorry knife-jacked, and the actual road itself is in a very serious, bad condition. It's cracking up. The road needs to be widened in a number of places, and a barrier needs to be erected.
Hey, sir, concerns too about the actual integrity of the road, the strength of the road?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. It's obviously, you can see the cracks on it, and all that's been done on it over the last while is just the road has been patched here and there. But look at, for the volume of traffic and for it to be such an important artery, the road needs to be strengthened, it needs to be widened, and it does need a barrier erected along it as well.
And you're of the view that we can't wait for the 10T project?
Well, look, the 10T project, as you're aware, we're hoping that there will be an announcement regarding the 10T project from the government before the summer recess. Even with that, Greg, as you know yourself, it would have to go through the CPOs and the planning stage. And look, you're talking about a number of years down the road before the 10T would be complete. So, look, in the meantime, do we just leave the road as it is and have more accidents on it? I don't think so. I think the TII have to act now and act urgently.
There's an audit ongoing of speed limits. We kind of forget sometimes, but Jack Chambers, he triggered this. So there's an audit of speed limits going on at the moment, which will allow speed limits to be varied. Do you believe that Manor to Lifford the whole way now should be 80 kilometres per hour following on from that audit?
Without a doubt, because look, you know, it is, you know, for anybody that's using this road, they know themselves, you know, it is a road that's not fit for 100 kilometres per hour, as simple as that. Because back that road there at Carrick Ballydewey, like, I mean, there have been three fatal accidents just back the road there, you know. Now, I'm not saying maybe all to do with speed. But look, you know, this road is only, in my estimation, an 80-kilometre road, and that is something that should be expedited, and you know, the road from Manor to Lifford should be reduced to 80 kilometres.
Okay, we'll see what the public think. Thank you very much indeed. That's Councillor Donald Coyle. Do you agree? 086 60 25,000. Now, Rory Gallagher has launched a revamped version of his legendary GE anthem, Jimmy's Winning Matches, to mark his home county's extraordinary success this year. Now, we have a break this weekend. There's still some cracking matches on. I don't know if it's my interest or maybe the quality of football's increasing or we're seeing better pairings more regularly. But, I mean, I saw three great matches last weekend. Looking forward to more this weekend as we take a break. Also, too, by the way, like, we're miles away from Croke Park. And we still don't really know what day Donegal might be playing in the quarterfinals. I'm presuming and correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm sure there's people involved in the association listening that can correct me if I'm wrong, but are we playing Saturday or Sunday? Is it two quarterfinal doubleheaders? You know, I know people are out there surely saying, right, well, it's too long of a journey with the kids or whatever. If I get tickets, I'd like to stay over. But, I mean, is it going to be Monday before we find out whether we're playing on the following Saturday or Sunday? Now, of course, accommodation in Dublin is going to be difficult to find at this stage. But at the same time, people might want to book somewhere an hour out or whatever it might be. We'd need a little bit further notice. Also, too, the teams we can and can't play is very confusing. Apparently, we can't play teams we've already played and certainly not in the provincial championship. But there's so many Ulster teams there. I don't know how that's going to be worked out again. I don't find that information really very clear. But anyway, let's take a break from worrying about that, because I'm going to play the new version of Jimmy's Winning Matches, because we want to support it here on the 9 till noon show. You can download it we'll link actually the download on our Facebook's the easiest thing to do, Highland Hub. But we're going to play it. This is the new version of Jimmy's Winning Matches. And the reason we're so keen to support it is that it is to raise funds for the Donegal Hospice. And we all know the importance of that. So let's hear this new version. Is it any good? Is it as good as the old one?
Here comes some Glendy's man. He's been in Celtic man. He's been in Charlotte and he's even been in China man. We've beaten Derry man or maybe Kerry man. We're beating anyone we meet in the final man. His destiny is not just written in the sand. Still got a plan, he's no lucky, lucky man. Oh, Jimmy's winning matches.
Jimmy's winning matches.
Jimmy's winning games.
Jimmy's winning games.
Jimmy's bringing sound back to Donegal again.
Donegal.
Oh, Jimmy's winning matches.
Jimmy's winning matches.
Jimmy's winning games.
Jimmy's winning games.
Jimmy's bringing sound back to Donegal again. He's not from Senegal, he comes from Donegal. And if you want a mighty player, Jimmy got them all. He got Gavin Mann, he got Patton Mann. He got McHugh, he got McPretty, he got Owen Van. We'll crack a smile, cause we've seen it all before. From Kilcar to Muff, from Letterkenny to Gidor. Oh, Jimmy's winning matches.
Jimmy's winning matches.
Jimmy's winning games.
Jimmy's
Jimmy's bringing Sammy back to Donegal again. Oh, Jimmy's winning matches.
Jimmy's winning matches.
Jimmy's winning games.
Jimmy's winning games.
Jimmy's bringing Sammy back to Donegal again. Boom, boom, boom. Donegal sing away. Donegal, say way-oh. His destiny's not just written in the sand. So this one's for Jim, he's a mighty modest man. Oh, team are winning matches, the team are winning games, the team are bringing sound back to Donegal again. Yeah, the team are winning matches, the team are winning games, the team are bringing sound back to Donegal again. Oh, Jimmy's winning matches, Jimmy's winning games, Jimmy's bringing sound back to Donegal again. Bringing sound back to Donegal again. Bringing sound back to Donegal again.
Now I'm joined on the programme by Paul McCormack, who's a former captain with the New York Police Department and originally from Ballybuffet. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning. How are you doing? How's things?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us. How are you keeping?
I'm doing fantastic. No complaints at all. Life is good. Just a Donegal victory next week in the quarterfinal would just really add the cherry on top of the cake here.
Okay, brilliant stuff. You never forget your Donegal roots, of course. You took part in the British Blind and Disabled Golf Open Championship in Massarine Golf Club, and you're able to take part in that because of the work you did at the World Trade Center back in 2001. Can you tell us a little bit about that, Paul?
Yeah, it's the British Open this year is for blind and all disabilities as well. And you know, I'm legally blind. I got my eyes damaged while working at Ground Zero, and I play blind and visually impaired golf and disabled golf now. It's a great outlet. Anybody listening who has children that are blind, visually impaired, or disabled, I would encourage them to look up, because it's not just golf. There's a lot of other sports and activities for the blind and disabled. That is wonderful to get people out of the house and help get your mind right, you know, because it can be a lonely and depressing place being visually impaired or blind. But when you have the ability to get out there and socialize, play sports, be active, it's great. It's fantastic.
And did you have to leave the police department?
I had to leave. I was, my eyes deteriorated over a 7-8 year period. And when you can't drive and you can't shoot, you're not much of a use as a police officer in New York. So it forced me to retire in 2010.
Through that work, though, Paul, you know, obviously you work with your colleagues, mixing with people all the time. It's a social element of it that you can lean on other people. That's a big loss, too, when you have to leave the organization. And is that why sort of being able to get out and socialize and get involved in something new is so important for you, I wonder?
Absolutely. I mean, having a disability like this, it's the loss of independence is the worst thing, to be honest with you. Not being able to get in your car and take off for a drive, and you need help with a lot of things. You rely on a lot of other people to help you, and it can be a little a little discouraging and sometimes embarrassing. I try and mask my vision impairment, and sometimes people will be waving at me from 20 feet away. I can't see them. They think I'm ignoring them and being a bit of a jerk, but it's not, I just can't see them. And I tell people, listen, just shout my name because I can't see you. And they're like, oh God, I didn't know that. But
okay.
I'm not complaining. Life is good. God is good. As I said, there's a lot of people suffering since 9/11. There's a lot of people are dying from cancers and respiratory diseases and other stuff that they contracted while working at Ground Zero. And I'm fortunate to be able to do what I do. As I said, I got a lovely family, and I have no complaints.
And it is interesting, Paul, and I think just worth pausing on that point for a moment, in that, of course, we all, and just because of the nature of media now, wherever we were in the world, we were able to observe the awful events of that day and the aftermath, and then a few years passed, and then, you know, a monument is put in place, and people move on, but so many of your colleagues and yourself, in fact, you know, carry the scars and the medical conditions of that fateful day, and shouldn't be forgotten either.
Yeah, there's 70,000 people. It's not just the first responders and the rescue workers that were there. There was the residents that were in the area we're breathing in all of the toxins. What happened is a lot of the computer components and the mercury and all got pulverized and sent out into the atmosphere. And we had no protective gear. And if you breathed in the wrong gulp of air at the wrong time, you like a lot of people have developed serious cancers. A lot of people have died. And it's rough. But the Mount Sinai Medical Center in New York had the 9/11 monitoring program. I go there once a year, as do, as I said, there's 70,000 people in the program. We get monitored every year, and just hopefully, I don't, knocking on wood as I'm talking to you here, mm-hmm. just don't develop anything too serious.
When did you leave Bally Buffet and why, Paul, before we talk about the golf?
I left Bally Buffet in 1986, just after doing my leaving cert at Stornoway Vocational School. And I left, it was the Charlie Haughey tighten your belt strap era.
Right.
There was a whole generation that were lost. I mean, most of the people that I grew up with had to emigrate or go on the dole. There was nothing there for us in Ireland at the time. It was probably 4 or 5 years just before the Celtic Tiger kicked in. But I had the good fortune of having an American passport. I was born in America, and I was able to emigrate to the States. And in 1980, I was just 18 when I left.
Right, and unfortunately, we're going through a cycle of our losing our best and brightest once again. So this is the 33rd year of the competition, the British Blind and Disabled Golf Open Championship. So talk to us about the event.
Yeah, it's one of the oldest events. Like, there's the big events, the British Open, the US Open, and it's just it's a great event for the blind, visually impaired, and now the disabled to come up and just express themselves, play sport, have that competitive edge. Like, I don't like to be treated any differently than anybody else. I'm a member at the Jameson Links up in Portmarnock in Dublin, and I don't get treated any different by the club members there, and I wouldn't have it any other way. We go out, we play our golf. I have to play with a guide. I have somebody that has to be able to line me up, keep an eye on my ball for me, tell me where my ball went, read the putts for me, tell me the line of the putts, etc. But aside from that, we're just as competitive and as crazy about golf as everybody else is. And,
yeah, I read a quote from you where you refer to fellow competitors as an inspiration to you, and that you admire these guys more than anyone else. It doesn't mean you don't want to kick their ass, though.
100%. Like, I talk about it. I have a very close friend from Spain, Alejandro de Miguel. He's fully blind. He can't. He's completely blind, and he's got like a 28 handicap. And the guy is hitting balls 250 wow. yards down the middle. He's the current world champion for fully blind golfers, and he won his category in Mazarin for the fully blind. And just when you see these guys, it's just unbelievable
yeah.
inspiration. And it's again, very, as you said, we still want to kick their ass. And but it's exciting stuff.
And how did you get on? You were in there's B1, B2, B3, isn't that right? Which category were you in, and how did you get on?
Well, I played in the overall category.
There's okay.
B1, B2, B3, but I was the overall men's champion of the event. And I'm delighted. This is my third time winning it. I'm a three-time champion now. Draw inspiration from, as I said, I look at the, Jim McGuinness and the Donegal team this year, the way they've turned things around is for Donegal Nation worldwide, what they have done to raise the spirits of every Donegal person on this planet is tremendous. And you draw inspiration from that. It makes you feel good. And as I said, from that sporting event, like I admire him. He's tremendous. Jim McGuinness is unbelievable.
And, what do you play off, Paul, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm playing off 16 right now.
Is there another sport that levels the playing field like golf? I wonder.
I don't think so.
You could have you and your Spanish mate and Rory McIlroy playing. It is. I don't think there's another sport that could do that.
No, there isn't. The handicap is the great equalizer worldwide. And that's what makes golf so good. Like, as I said, you can go out against anybody, but your golf handicap is your golf handicap. It's the world handicap system. It's the same in every country. And it is the great equalizer. Like, I played in the Irish Disabled Open in Rogenstown 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I couldn't hit snow off a rope 2 weeks ago. Really, I was useless. And The weather wasn't great. It was lashing, and it was a lovely course. But it was but then it's just golf's funny. Like, 2 weeks later, I couldn't miss, and it's a great sport. You know, you can play really, really horribly, but you get that one really good shot. It just keeps bringing you back. Golf's but it's great to clear your head. It's great to get out there and be able to do it. And it's a sport that's very inclusive worldwide. It's something that the disabled are welcomed in sport. And I said with golf, with the R&A and the USGA right now, they have become very inclusive. And like, I'm going to Kansas City in about a month to play in the USGA Adaptive Open. I qualified for that event, and I'm delighted to be going there. That's a huge event for the blind and disabled worldwide.
And Paul, we talked about how great a leveler golf is, and it's like the heartbreak for McIlroy at the weekend, you know, missing 2 3-footers, less than 3 footers. This is, you know, the best player in the world, one of the best players in the world, and everyone can get the jitters. I mean, it did really come down to those.
McIlroy, like Rory's, you know, he's an inspirational player, and he dogs it out every tournament. And I felt so bad for him. I mean, anybody that plays golf, you know that sometimes those 3 footers, those nasty little 3 foot sliders, they can go in sometimes, but sometimes you lip out on them, and it happens. And it happened at the worst time for him. The worst time. I thought he had it. I thought he had the tournament won. But he was so unfortunate. I hope he doesn't stay away too long.
No, he won't. He won't.
He's an inspiration for a lot of people out
exactly.
there.
Exactly. And I just want to say, Paul, you've spoke a couple of times of the inspiration Jim McGuinness and the Donegal players are. But in your sport and field and what you've achieved and what you are achieving, I'm sure you're an inspiration to them as well. And it's been wonderful speaking to you, and good luck in the upcoming tournament, and congratulations on your win during the week. And thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much. Up Donegal, go Jim and the boys, okay?
All right, okay. That's Paul McCormick, a former captain with the New York Police Department, originally from Ballybuffet. Let us know what you think.